Continuing now with our Pierre Joseph Proudhon readings, Lessons from Proudhon. But before we begin, a brief interject. I always want to put this out on the record because I don't have the means right now to monitor or know how what I put out, whether it gets out, how it gets out. I cannot help but suspect, as there's always a drone hovering in the distance at 3 a.m. or whenever, above the library even when I go. I'm attuned to the sound. Others not familiar don't hear it necessarily. And the network selection process has become less selective. I cannot help but suspect that my uploads are being intercepted. I've mentioned this before, and I just want to reiterate, yes, still happening, will not end until there are dramatic changes in my circumstances. So I can't know whether the integrity, or in what way, because there must be some reason they're doing this, the integrity or the quality of the content is being messed with. I can only hope that a secure way to post to my own website and work unimpeded on my own machine, for that matter, may become available one day. Our Mother Earth is come not to destroy the law or the prophets, but to fulfill us. The insidiousness of class is that it invades our bodies. And the whole point I'm seeing, catching up finally to Prince after a lifetime of trying, that we got to listen to our bodies. We got to take them back. Continuing with Proudhon, quote, if we trace the development of the moral sense in individuals and the progress of laws in nations, we shall be convinced that the ideas of justice and legislative perfection are always proportional to intelligence. Now, you knew I had to interject into that, right? Recall, this work was completed in 1839. It's shocking how fresh it is. It just shows how much our thoughts are conditioned, how much has been suppressed. Don't get me started. I'll get emotional in some sense. In some sense, not already obvious. Recall, this work was completed in 1839 and written in the years just prior, when Proudhon was in his 20s, a mere babe. Kropotkin, writing with the maturity of years and after witnessing a hideous degree of suffering, obfuscated with that rubric, the law, and possessing the advantage of seeing the modern centralized bureaucratic state, and having made his likewise assessment, says this, quote, and this is Peter Kropotkin, servility before the law has become a virtue, and I doubt if there was ever a revolutionist who did not begin in his youth as the defender of law against what are generally called abuses, although these last are inevitable consequences of the law itself. Art pipes in unison with would-be science, the hero of the sculptor, the painter, the musician. Shields law beneath his buckler, and with flashing eyes and distended nostrils, stands ever ready to strike down the man who would lay hands upon her. Temples are raised to her. Revolutionists themselves hesitate to touch the high priests consecrated to her service. And when revolution is about to sweep away some ancient institution, it is still by law that it endeavors to sanctify the deed. The confused mass of rules of conduct called law, which has been bequeathed to us by slavery, serfdom, feudalism, and royalty, has taken the place of those stone monsters before whom human victims used to be immolated. This new worship has been established with a special success since the rise to supreme power of the middle class since the great French Revolution. Under the ancient regime, men spoke little of laws, unless indeed it were with Montesquieu, Rousseau, and Voltaire to oppose them to royal caprice. Obedience to the good pleasure of the king and his lackeys was compulsory on pain of hanging or imprisonment. But during and after the revolutions, when the lawyers rose to power, what we now know are the self-organization of the global statesmen that I call Plato's tribesmen, because they use Plato as that authority, quote unquote, as self-justification. The lawyers rose to power. They did their best to strengthen the principle upon which their ascendancy depended. The middle class at once accepted it as a dike to dam up the popular torrent. The priestly crew hastened to sanctify it, to save their bark from foundering amid the breakers. Finally, the people received it as an improvement upon the arbitrary authority and violence of the past. And that is from Kropotkin's essay, Law and Authority, included in the PDF you can download free from the blog page of the Nascence website, titled Peter Kropotkin on the State and the Economy. And this quote is from a longer excerpt from the November 8, 2015 show in which we discussed Peter Kropotkin. I've posted it with the May 29 show audio, in which we said, that is to say, the show in which we discussed Kropotkin, November 8, 2015, we said that the invention of the global state, the global interstate system, was accomplished with words only, which confirms the need to put new ones in our minds and on our tongues consciously. Kropotkin's broad, topographic, aerial, from the vantage of the whole view of the 19th century and the influences which shaped it, from the perspective of having lived through its second half, helps us understand Proudhon's optimism, particularly in this first memoir. Proudhon believed, I suspect, that the middle class, the lawyers Kropotkin speaks of, from which coalesced Plato's tribesmen, were subject to the influence of reason. He could not look into their nurseries and see the fixity of their father's focus on inculcating obedience, by which means they bludgeoned out the capacity for independent thought, which I would argue is the only authentic thought. Unhindered by the state, continuous growth occurs of itself. It is our inheritance from life, our earth gift. The state has naught to do with it but theft, and subsequent promotion of its misattributed provenance, its false stamp pounded onto it.